I'm sure Shadowmeld will be able to find a way to make it work, but at this point in time, Iron Man plus Fireball equals no AIA.
I do think it will come down to the skill of a pilot, but Maria Hill does so much for making Iron Man the most viable counter to AIA. So kudos to you, man. That was a great find. Now I have to go find another despicably evil team to build.
Welcome to episode 4 of The Prep Area. I am your host, RJ Retro, along with the nefarious geneticist himself, Shadowmeld. It feels like it has been years since we did the last episode.
Let me tell you, I am exhausted, but for all good reasons.
Yeah, I am excited and exhausted. The last, I don't know, 3 or 4 days, Shadowmeld and I have sat down and we have played nothing but Little Cup, and we have had a blast doing so. And that's why the first team this week is going to be a Little Cup Avengers team. Now, I'm excited about this because it's going to be a team that I built mostly by myself with a little bit of input from guys like Randy and Shadowmeld, of course, and other guys on thereservepool.com. So we're going to do that. We're also going to talk a little bit about a new meta that has been created by my brother-in-law, actually. He goes by the name of Rod of Nor on the forum, and it has to do with combining Dice Masters with a little bit of exercise, and hopefully you'll find that interesting, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And then the main event this week, Shadowmeld, you've been excited for Wonder Man for a long time, and you finally get a chance to build a team around him.
Well, yeah, last week I built a team around the uncommon Wonder Man. This week I chose a different Wonder Man to put on the team. But this team, Avengers West Coast, is the comics I used to read in the Avengers line, and so the only thing I like out of Age of Ultron is all of the Avengers West characters that show up, like Wonder Man, Vision, Scarlet Witch, etc.
Yeah, this looks like a really fun team. It's almost Little Cup legal, as there's only 2 uncommons and 1 rare. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the episode as well. By the way, we want to thank Necromanticer and Dr. Count Von Homesch for coming back this week as well. And we will also take a look at what was on the attack zone last Tuesday. The reason as to why we haven't done a podcast in seemingly years, and we will also have an episode of TRPN, that would be the Reserve Pool Network News. So all that coming up a little bit later on, but first let's talk about Little Cup. I'm really interested in this meta. We've had a lot of fun building teams around various themes. So for example, my girlfriend is building a Justice League team. You have built an X-Men team that we may talk about at a later time.
Little Cup AIA. Little Cup AIA.
And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well, because I needed to find a way to counter it, and I think I did find a way as well. I mean, we've seen people build Fantastic Four. We've seen Dragons. We've seen a lot of stuff. And so we are going to be doing more Little Cup on the site in the form of a league or in the form of a tournament with some videos and so forth. Lots of plans for Little Cup, and we're going to have some fun. So we're going to continue building some Little Cup teams for you to give you some ideas, and hopefully we'll start seeing more of you guys on Vassal, because we have had so much fun on Vassal in the last couple of days. Shadowmeld?
Oh my goodness. What was it, 4 o'clock in the morning? Because we had like 8 people on and nobody wanted to get off. It was like we were playing chicken for the amount of sleep we could get.
Yeah, and everybody's playing Little Cup teams, all different themes. It was so much fun, and hopefully we'll get more people on. Although that wasn't a weekend day, hopefully we can start doing more things over the weekend where people are not working and so forth. So watch the forums carefully, watch the front page carefully. You are going to see more Little Cup in the near future. But first, let's get to the Little Cup Avengers, and we are mixing this up because normally it's Shadowmeld that creates the wacky evil teams, but I guess this isn't really a wacky evil team at all. It's Little Cup Avengers.
Yeah, there's not anywhere near enough evil on this team for me to ever want to make it myself. It's too much good.
Yeah, so let's get underway with this one here.
All right, so RJ's going to have me introduce the cards, and he's going to throw down his genius on it. So let's see how good I am at this. The first thing we have on this team is an idea that Randy has been proposing on the website. And it's to use Maria Hill, Avengers Liaison. And oddly enough, that is exactly what she does. She liaises between all of your Avengers and helps you out. She is a two-cost shield with the shield affiliation. You can have four of her, and her text says, when this character and a shield that is the energy type, not the not the affiliation character, go to the used pile at the same time, put both into your prep area instead.
One thing you're going to see about this team is that we don't really have a ton of ramp. So what we're going to do is hopefully field, or rather be able to buy two Maria Hills on that first turn. Because if we're rolling her on turn two, if, let's say the opponents don't field any sidekicks or don't field any characters, I guess it would only have to be sidekicks. We can attack, get unblockable damage because there's nobody for them to use to block, and they both go into the used pile. Oh, wait a minute. No, they would go into the prep area. Now, there's still some, debate as to whether or not that's what happens, but, you know, worst case scenario, if that's not how it works, this team will still work on a number of different levels. If, let's say, they do field some sidekicks, we can use those double shields for Maria Hill to purchase some other big-time shield characters, and instead of them going to the used pile, they're going right into the prep area. We'll talk more about those really strong shield characters in a little while.
Yeah, first, let's talk about your other non-Avenger, who is also a two-cost shield character. You have Nick Fury, Mr. Anger. And while Nick Fury is active, you may field Avenger characters for free.
The two-cost shield from the AVX set, I have three dice on his card because Nick Fury allows me to field five characters on this team for free. And I have played many games this week where people think, okay, well, that's fine. He's not going to be able to pay to field everybody. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, he can. You know, level three monsters coming onto the field and I'm swinging for lethal before they even know what's happening. So Nick Fury allows me to field those Avengers for free. He's kind of a decent blocker if I can get him on level one or level, level two or level three. But even then, if I do, I can spin someone else down, spin somebody else up. We'll get into the basic actions a little bit later on, but that's Nick Fury, Mr. Anger.
Speaking of people that you like spinning, you have our first Avenger, and I believe he's your favorite Avenger on this entire team. That would be Giant Man, Dr. Henry Pym, aka High Pockets, the three-cost mask character, Avengers affiliation, no text.
Doesn't need any text. You are correct. He is my favorite Avenger, and he's probably my favorite Dice Masters card and dice of all time, and that says a lot because Namor the Submariner is my favorite character, and his common is really good. His rare is really good. I'm sure his uncommon is too. I just don't know how to use him properly. Giant Man, Dr. Henry Pym, I use three of his dice. He's from the New Age of Ultron set, and if I field him at level one, that's fine. I will spin him up to level two or level three really quickly. He's a three cost that can hit for seven damage. You can quickly get two Giant Man in there, level 3, without too much difficulty, and you're swinging for 14 damage. Giant Man Dr. Henry Pym, I think, is honestly the best character in the new set, and one of the best characters in Little Cup, for sure. I mean, 3 cost, you're doing so much damage. He is amazing.
Yeah, I think he's like everything that Adam wanted to be, but wasn't. Alright, so next up, we have another mask character. We have Black Widow Natasha. She's our last cheap Avenger. She is 2-mask Avenger, and she says Black Widow can't be blocked unless your opponent spins down one of their character dice.
If I have a really bad roll with Black Widow, with my psychic dice on turn one, I mean, I can buy her. She also helps me with one of my major issues, and that's that sometimes I take too long to attack. The fact that Black Widow can get unblockable damage for, you know, more often than not, 2 damage, that's going to help. It's going to help me get to lethal. It's just a really powerful card, I think. It is the number one card in AOU. I have 3 dice on her card. I mean, she's just sort of there. She's a lot better than Falcon, who I had before, because quite often I was rolling fists and not being able to do anything with them. At least with the masks of Black Widow, if I happen to roll double masks, I can spin something down, spin something else up, or buy more Giant Men. And you can never have too many Giant Men, unless you're, you know, bringing more than 4, because that's pretty illegal.
She's also got that niche, if your opponent brings Professor X, she's a good, like, first turn purchase to get a seven cost, like, a seven die turn one. Like, you know, you spend a mask and then a mask and a mask, and you buy a two cost character and you get a seven dice on turn two. So, yeah, she's a good character to have to balance that out. All right. Next up, we have, let's see, the next guy up the list is Iron Man Playboy. He's a four-cost shield character, and by that, I mean he's an Avenger, but his energy type is shield. And he says, each time Iron Man takes damage in the attack step, he deals three damage to one opposing character that is attacking or blocking.
I have two Iron Man dice on this card from the AVX set, and I'm really happy because I haven't really seen anyone else talk about Iron Man in this way. I think that he is the counter to AIA Apologies in Advance, because when the Beholder comes out and declares himself as an attacker, he has to use all four basic actions. And one of the basic actions I have, and I'll be more specific with it later, Fireball, it deals two damage to each player and each character. Well, okay, that's perfectly fine, because now Iron Man's taking damage, he deals three more damage, that's going to kill Beholder on Beholder's level 3 face. So there you go, there's no way you could really use AIA if I get Iron Man out quickly. And with Maria Hill on this team, where I can buy Maria Hill and something else and immediately prep it, that could be Iron Man. All I need to do is have six dice out. I could have that on turn two. So while they're looking to get Beholder on turn two, I could potentially have Iron Man as early as turn three. I think it's a great counter to AIA. And worst case scenario, he's still beastie. When his defense is 5, 6, 7, and I can field him for free, I'm a fan of Iron Man Playboy for sure.
I know you're a fan of Iron Man, but what about his evil nemesis? And by evil, I mean not evil at all. Captain America, the Star-Spangled Avenger. He's a five-cost shield Avenger. And again, shield energy type. When fielded, knock out each of your opponent's sidekick characters. Gain one life for each sidekick knocked out this way.
I have two Captain America dice on this card, and I went from all Captain Americas over the last week when I was building this team. And there was a time where I had Silver Surfer on this team, Magic Missile, where I had the Captain America where he takes, you know, if you take damage, you can spin him up. And, well, okay, I spin Captain America up for free and I get a life. Great, okay, I'll spin someone else down. But after removing all those other cards and coming to this team that we have right now, this one seems to make the most sense. I get a little bit of life gain if they do have sidekicks on their team. It's not terribly difficult for me to get a Captain America and a Maria Hill purchased on the same turn where I could prep them the next turn. Why not? Captain America just fits really well, and I think it helps too as well if I'm facing an AIA team where, okay, I'm fielding Captain America for free more often than not. And yeah, I'm taking damage from Fireball, that's fine. But then I'm healing it right back. And by eliminating those sidekicks, it also eliminates some of the blockers that they can have. So if I've had trouble getting my win condition out, which we'll talk about relatively soon, I'm guessing, it makes it a lot easier for me to swing those 7 damage from Giant Man through, or 5 from Iron Man, or 5 from Captain America. By eliminating those sidekicks, I eliminate their weenie wall. The synergy is just very well done, I think, in this team.
I think one of the other things that's really nice about this guy is his level 2 and level 3 face are the same attack value. So if you spin him down from 3 to 2, he gets good value. And at the same time, his level 1 face, if you spin it up to level 2, is a plus 2 damage increase. So that can give you some nice combat math increases. All right, next up, we have our last Avenger. I'm saving your win condition for the last card. Our next Avenger is Hulk, Jade Giant. He's a 6-cost fist Avenger, and he says, while Hulk is active, when either you or Hulk takes damage, knock out one of your opponent's level 1 characters on his burst face, which would be level 1 and level 2. Instead, knock out one opposing character of any level.
Hulk, Jade Giant, I only have one die on his card, and he really is the super situational card. I like to think that this little cup team could be fairly competitive with some just standard teams out there. And, you know, if they're coming in with a Gobby, or they're coming in with any sort of magic missile or anything that allows me to, even AIA, if they come in and use fireball or something, it basically triggers Hulk and I can eliminate whatever the heck I want on their board. I happen to find that's kind of interesting. Hulk is a beast. If I need him to do a lot of damage, he can, and I'm not afraid of rolling a level 3 Hulk. Great. Okay, I field him for free. I spin him down to level 2 to get his burst face, and I spin something else up. I lose one attack, one defense, so what? Maybe Giant Man gains 3 and 3. I just think that Hulk could work in some very specific situations, and again, with these Maria Hills coming in and the shield characters coming in and being prepped, it wouldn't even be terribly difficult for me to roll 6 if I needed to. Hulk is there for situational purposes. I think we all know why Jay Giant is as beasty as he is.
All right, last up, we have our situational Avenger, the guy who's always on the outside of the Avengers, kind of wishing he could be in there. Spider-Man Webslinger, 5 fist, no affiliation, and when Spider-Man assigns to attack, you may pay a fist to force every opposing character to block him if able.
I have 2 Spider-Mans on this team, and really, even Alana, my girlfriend, is building a Justice League team, and it has this exact Spider-Man web-slinger on it, because the logic is, if he was a DC character, he would be in the Justice League. Spider-Man's on every group ever, with maybe the exception of some sort of villains, and maybe he has, and I just haven't read the story. This Spider-Man is one of the best cards in Little Cup, I truly believe, because all you have to do is pay a fist, and he can serve as your removal. He goes to the prep area. That's fine. You can say everybody's going to block Spider-Man. Spider-Man's going to kill whoever you want to remove. Plus, if you've got those Giant Mans, those 7 attack Giant Mans there, or the 5 attack Captain America, or the 5 attack Iron Man, assuming you've chipped away some damage with Black Widow Natasha, you're swinging for lethal really quickly. Spider-Man just really solves the problem of, okay, they've got a huge wall. Okay, they've got specific characters that are a problem for me. He does a lot of everything, and all it costs is 1 fist and the 1 energy to field him. I happen to think that he's just a great value for what he does. He fits on almost any team, I do believe. He wasn't originally on mine, but when I saw how it worked with Little Justice League, I had no choice but to consider adding Spider-Man Webslinger. I would recommend everybody to at least take a look at him and see if it fits into what you're trying to do.
And last but not least, we have our 2 basic actions, which you probably could have assumed by now. We have Polymorph and Fireball. Polymorph says is a 3-cost basic action. Swap a fielded character with a non-NPC character from that player's used pile. Spend the character to level 1. This does not trigger when fielded effects. And it has a global that says pay 1 mask. Spend 1 of your characters down a level to spend another character up a level.
When it comes to every character that's ever been made in Dice Masters, I don't think there is a character that gets more out of that global than Giant Man. He goes from a 1-1 to a 4-4 to a 7-7. He is a 3-cost. That is crazy, crazy value for 1 mask. Also, I've got Hulk on this team. I don't mind spinning Hulk down to spin somebody else up. I don't mind spinning Captain America down from level 3 to level 2. Or, you know what? I love spinning Captain America up from level 1 to level 2. This is just one of the best globals in the game for my team, what I want it to be able to do. And if I buy it, that helps as well, because all I have to do is swap Spider-Man in, and I could be swinging for lethal that turn. Or I could bring in Hulk and use him to get rid of a specific character that I need to get rid of. Polymorph is perfect for any spinning team, and it's perfect, I think Polymorph and Giant Man just match up incredibly well. I also don't mind spinning down Nick Fury and those characters that are just sort of there, like Black Widow, Natasha. Whether it be 1 or 2 damage, doesn't matter. I'm getting so much value out of polymorphing Giant Man. I could talk about this forever. It's just the perfect, perfect basic action for Giant Man.
And lastly, Fireball. Deal 2, it's a 4-cost basic action. Deal 2 damage to each player and each character. You may also spend a bolt to deal 1 damage to a target character. You may spend the bolt multiple times. Thus, you can stack up a bunch of bolts to KO something. And it has on the double burst face, deal 1 additional damage to each player and each character.
Fireball is there for 2 reasons. 1, I'm way out ahead in the game where I've got unblockable damage from Giant Man or Black Widow, and I've dropped them really quickly, and I want to finish them off without having to fill up my bag with a bunch of characters, but more importantly, for AIA. It's there if the Beholder comes in and tries to imprison everything. Well, Fireball plus Iron Man almost assuredly will destroy the Beholder. They have to basically set up just to beat that, and by the time they've done that, I probably have built up my force even faster. So Fireball is just a perfect anti-AIA when teamed with Iron Man, and I think this duo combo is going to eliminate AIA almost altogether. I'm sure Shadowmeld will be able to find a way to make it work, but at this point in time, Iron Man plus Fireball equals no AIA.
I do think it will come down to the skill of a pilot, but Maria Hill does so much for making Iron Man the most viable counter to AIA. So kudos to you, man. That was a great find. Now I have to go find another despicably evil team to build.
Which, you know what, by the time we do the next episode, you know, 7 years from now, or at least it will feel like 7 years, you'll probably have created two or three very evil teams. But this is the Little Cup Avengers, no evil at all goodness, lots of fun, and give it a try at your local store if you want for those Little Cup tournaments, or if you just want to go and beat those, you know, super competitive teams as well, give it a go. This is the most fun team I've ever played with when it comes to Dice Masters, and it really helped me find my sort of play style. I really enjoy it. And I'd also recommend as well, make sure you post your Little Cup teams and your created teams and your ideas on the forum so that we all can help each other out, because I wouldn't be able to have made this team as good as I had without the help of Shadowmeld and without the help of Randy and guys like that. So, you know, I appreciate you guys coming on board and letting me play this team. I've probably played more games with this team in the last week than I have the entire time I've played Dice Masters.
You have been playing a lot of games with this team. I will say one thing I really like about Little Cup, and that has been expressed, you know, JT and Randy as well, is that Little Cup is enough of a handicap that you don't feel like that if you know nobody else in your store has the super rare Gabi and the super rare Serena, and you feel like every time you go to the store, you just don't want to pull out that highly tournament competitive deck, but you still feel like you want to be challenged in building a team, go Little Cup. Little Cup can still beat all the teams with rares and super rares. It may not be able to outpace, you know, Truby's Johnny Swarm team, but what it can do is it can give you a challenge in your local gaming store so that you aren't always the guy that everybody's complaining about because you just pull out all your super rares and beat people in the face with. It kind of levels the playing field without, you know, making you feel like you had to tie your arm behind your back.
We'll take a break. Here's the Reserve Pool Network news for this week. And when we come back, we're going to discuss Dice Masters drills, and we're going to go off the meta, and so much happening right here on the Prep Area. You're listening to the Reserve Pool Network. It's your source for Dice Masters news, TRPN News, with RJ Retro. Welcome to the Reserve Pool Network News. I'm RJ Retro, sitting in for the vacationing Eddie Brock. The biggest news in Dice Masters is the impending arrival of Age of Ultron. The set will be released July 15th, and check your friendly local gaming store for events and details. I'm being handed a piece of paper here. This just in, apparently the forecast for July 15th is expected to have storms of rules debates on new card interactions, showers of empty packaging, and the day will end with a sky full of rainbows. Oh, there's a second page. Our meteorologist, Dr. Weatherman with name that's real, says he recommends keeping your eye out for possible floods from Hurricane Maria Hill and submit a rules query now as an act of storm preparedness. Okay. I guess we should go to the reservepool.com and read the latest article from Shadowmeld that discusses the Maria Hill fiasco. Well, we can't end on that note. There was no joke or anything funny. Okay, I'm getting another piece of paper. This just in. A man was arrested for trying to ride a lawn chair into the Calgary Stampede with a bunch of helium-filled balloons. Well, that's an actual story. What, you thought Canada was boring? Psh, Google it. That actually happened. The guy thought that he could get into the big event by riding a lawn chair with a bunch of helium-filled balloons tied to it. That's a news update on the Reserve Pool Network News. I'm RJ Retro.
Hey everybody, it's Dave here plugging The Attack Zone, our bi-weekly podcast that digs into the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. If you missed us last week on episode 5, you missed a lot. We had a big discussion digging deep into all of the different ways that we manage our resources, those pesky bolts, shields, fists, and whatever else we have in this game. How do we manage those? How do we make them more efficient for us? When should we buy? When should we not? And more importantly, how do we screw up our opponent's use of those resources? All of that and more on The Attack Zone episode 5. We'll see you every other Tuesday on the Reserve Pool Network.
Welcome back to the prep area here on the Reserve Pool Network. RJ Retro here. Shadow Meld is going to take a little bit of a break while I bring in a new co-host for today, or at least for this segment anyway. We're going to be talking with Rod of Nor, who is my brother-in-law. He's also brand new to the forums, but he is a player of Dice Masters, and he's also a personal trainer. What he wanted to do was mix some sort of a game with exercise, make it a little bit more fun to work out, and allow people that maybe do not get a lot of exercise, like myself, to get more exercise in. So we're going to talk a little bit about Dice Masters drills first. Rod of Nor, thanks for coming on the show today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I want to give you tons of credit for bringing this into the Dice Masters universe because it allows me to actually get some more exercise in, and that's something that I certainly appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, let's connect it to something that you know a fair bit about. It makes it a lot easier for me. I don't have to come up with all the rules and all the different triggers for different exercises. And the idea of connecting it to a game has always been very important to me because I find that the gaming community isn't really averse to exercise. They just kind of look at it as boring. So connecting it to a game makes it a heck of a lot more fun.
Now, we worked together on this, but this really was your brainchild. Can you talk a little bit more about what Dice Masters Drills is trying to accomplish?
Yeah, the most important thing to me when we were talking about it was that it wasn't about the exercise necessarily, it was about the game. There are a lot of fitness games out there. There are a lot of ideas how to turn exercise into a game. And I think that's completely the wrong approach for gamers, whether you're a console gamer or you're a card game player or you're a dice game or RPGs, tabletop, anything you any type of gaming. Taking exercise and turning it into a game is the wrong approach. It shouldn't be about the exercise. It should be about the game first, because that's where the entertainment value is, and then the game begets the exercise. And to me, it's an approach that hasn't really been done. You see a lot of the Wii Fits and the Kinect games, and EA's got quite a few different sports exercise games, but they're all exercise turned into games, as opposed to games turning into exercising.
In Dice Masters Drills, there are 5 triggers that you can set off. The first 3 involve fielding characters, the 4th involves using globals, and the 5th would be the calculation done at the end of the game determining how much damage you took to a maximum of 20. That means that if you have a bunch of life gain, it doesn't mean you're going to avoid a lot of exercising. But anyway, we'll get there in a minute. First off, if you field a level 1 character, you do a different exercise. Level 2, same thing. Level 3, same thing. 4th, anytime you use a global. And then your 5th is you take how much damage you've done and you do an exercise that many times. For me, I prefer jumping jacks for that one. Now, there are some mechanics in the game where you could feasibly force your opponent to do more exercises, but we don't really like that at this point in time. So let's say you spin an opponent's level 3 character to level 2. That means that you've just made a level 2 character appear on their field. You would then do the level 2 exercise. So there are some characters in this game that are very good for making you do a lot of exercises. For example, Marvel Girl Telekinetic. When she is fielded, you spin down every one of your opponent's characters. You're going to be doing a lot of level 1 or level 2 exercises. So those are the 5 triggers that we're talking about. And Rod, what are some of the exercises that you would recommend using for this style of game?
All right. Now, one of the interesting things about Dice Masters is that because you can field a level 1, 2, or 3 at any time, you don't have to necessarily level a character up or roll up the die or roll down the die. The exercises don't have to be an ascending difficulty. You can put any difficulty anywhere you like. If you notice you're going to field a lot more level 1s with the playstyle you've got and you want the more difficult exercise for that, put it there. But pick 3 different exercises, preferably full body exercises, for fielding a character. My favorites are one abdominal exercise, which is, you know, depending on the abdominal exercise you pick, V-ups are great if you want to do far more in the way of full body exercise, or you can do something as simple as crunches. Pick one push-up exercise, because the push-up is an amazing exercise for the full body. It does the arms, it does the chest, it does the back, it does the core, it does the legs. And then pick one more intense exercise, something like either a burpee or tuck jump, something that's an explosive movement that really engages large muscle groups. And then for your health at the end, I would definitely recommend something like jumping jacks, or if you really, really want to push it, something like a jump knee tuck, something that can be done quickly. So you're not wasting a lot of time. I mean, if you were to pick burpees and you had to do 20 burpees at the end of a game, you'd be there for 5-6 minutes. That's, you know, you want to get back into the game. You don't want to be so worn out you can't do it again for a second round if you're feeling it.
So for me, what I do is for fielding a level 1 character, I do a sit-up level 2 character, I do a push-up level 3 character, I do a burpee. When I use a global, I do a squat, and then for at the end of the game, when I'm calculating how much damage I've taken, I do jumping jacks, so the most amount I'm going to be doing there is 20. So it works for me because I'm not necessarily in great shape, but I'm also not in terrible shape either. So that works for me. Obviously, everybody's going to be at a different fitness level, and so you're going to want to make sure that these are exercises that you can do. So these ones I could do all day and keep playing, and it's not going to be a big issue for me.
Now, here's the important thing, is you can scale the exercises to any fitness level. And when I say this, I don't mean change the exercises. You can use the exact same examples you had there with the sit-up, the push-up, and the burpee. And those could be changed to any fitness level. You can do a push-up off of a wall. That is still a push-up. You can do your burpee without the push-up and without the jump on the end, where you just reach down to the floor, step back, step forward, stand up, reach the ceiling. That's it. The sit-ups can be turned into crunches. Or if you're still having difficulty, you can put a pillow or a wedge behind your shoulders to get yourself already slightly elevated to make it easier. When you hear the term burpee, you don't have to think, oh, jump down, jump back up, knees to the chest, push up in the middle. Scale the exercise to your fitness level. And that includes moving up if they're too easy for you.
What sort of advice would you give people for those that don't necessarily know the proper way of doing a push-up or the proper way of doing a sit-up or have never heard of the term burpee before? What's the best way to go out there and learn those exercises without having to go to a gym or hire a personal trainer or something like that? Is this something you could just find online?
YouTube's a great source of information. I have a video on how to do push-ups through the whole range of difficulty down from starting with the wall all the way down to the floor on my YouTube channel. There will be a burpee, probably by the time you guys broadcast this, I'll have a burpee video up as well. YouTube is a great source of information. You can get very, very good advice for everything. One of the things I would stress is when you're looking at a YouTube channel for fitness advice or for exercise advice, is verify it with a second source of information. Do not just look at a video unless this person's got a bio up there that shows his qualifications or her qualifications. Don't just take the first video you see showing you how to do exercise for granted. For example, there is a gentleman whose channel I follow. He's a fitness styled channel, and he's a very fit individual, but because of such, he does some of the form wrong, and some people could get injured following his advice if they didn't know this. So always verify with a second source if you're going to trust something open like YouTube.
All right, so what we're going to be doing in the future, in the not-too-distant future, is we are going to be posting videos of us playing Dice Masters drills. Alana's going to be getting on board with it. So there's going to be three of us playing this style. And hopefully more of you will join us as well as we get this underway. So for anyone that's looking for more information on Dice Masters drills, watch the forum, watch their front page. We are going to be posting more stuff. Rod, if anyone wants to get a hold of you, if they have any questions, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Email is the easiest way to get a hold of me if they're looking for any information or advice. Like I say, advice is always free. So if you've got any questions in general about fitness, feel free to send me an email. Just make sure you let me know where you heard from me. So in this case, let me know you heard me on the podcast or you've seen me on the forums. And just send me an email with your question. I'll try to get back to you as promptly as possible. And no question is a stupid question. So don't feel embarrassed by a question you may feel you should already know.
So what's your email address?
The email address is Rod, R-O-D-D, Provence, that's my last name, P-R-O, V as in Victor, E-N-C-H-E-R, @gmail.com.
That's Rod of Nor. You can find him on the forum as well. If you send him a private message, he'll be able to respond to you that way as well. And we're going to see him a lot more on the forum as we get more Dice Masters Drills stuff going. And we're going to mix in some Little Cup as well, probably, because it allows me to have even more fun. And that's what this is all about. Finding more ways to have fun while playing Dice Masters, and in this case, I guess, get some fitness in there as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from Dr. Count von Homesch, who is the Latverian Dice Masters champion for 2015. We're going to talk to him about some basic advice on what may help you be a better Dice Masters player. But before we get to that and the main event tonight, the West Coast Avengers team built by Shadowmeld, we are going to go off the meta with Necromanticer. You're listening to the Prep Area here on the Reserve Pool Network.
Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Necromanticer, returning to you with a second installment of Off the Meta here on the Prep Area to explore yet another character that hasn't seen much competitive play. For this week, we'll be looking at the Minotaur from my personal favorite set, Dungeons & Dragons Battle for Faerun. He's a 5-fist purchase with an offensive body. There are more puns to come, but a whopping total fielding cost of 6 and low defenses. In the legends of yore, the Minotaur of Crete was fed the best and brightest that Athens had to offer, but here in Dice Masters, he preys upon the weak. All three Minotaurs are designed around countering chump blockers, but the common really shines in this respect. Whenever you field him, your opponent's sidekicks can't block for the rest of the turn, and he gets +1/+1 for each sidekick affected. There are many ways to stop sidekick walls, but this way doesn't involve giving your opponent any knockouts for energy, and also grants you a big, beefy character to take advantage of the opening. Not only is this a strong ability, but it also is just incredibly thematic. It conjures images of a rampaging Minotaur stomping onto a battlefield in a bloodthirsty rage. The very sight of such an unnatural abomination at the height of its power cows the lowly sidekicks, and not but the strongest of heroes even dares engage the beast. On its own, this ability can shut down half of your opponent's chump blockers without even needing to target a character, but to get the most out of him and his high fielding cost, you're going to want to send this beast ramming straight into your opponent's face. To do this, you're going to need to manipulate your opponent's non-sidekick blockers. You can do this with cheap characters that can assign their own blockers, like Deadpool and Gelatinous Ooze, using globals like the time-honored Relentless or the newfangled Ultron drones, or even clearing the board with targeted removal like Solomon Grundy or Psylocke against the non-sidekick characters. No matter how you get it done, your opponent isn't going to last long at all with an incensed Minotaur goring him to death. To make sure this happens as often as possible, you can pair Minotaur with the Summon Skull Global and promptly place him back in your bag for round 2 whenever he gets through. If your opponent is still alive after a second go-around, well, you've probably taken a beating of your own, so the faster you can churn him back out, the better. One of the biggest benefits of this strategy is that it's going to starve your opponent of the normal knockout ramp that happens throughout a game. He's going to have to rely on his own attacks or blue eyes to get characters cycling, and this can really take a toll over the course of the game, costing your opponent a steady supply of bolts or allowing you to pick favorable blocks. Should you have the misfortune to ever come up against this mad cow, you have a few ways to stall him out. Since this Minotaur relies on a when fielded effect, he's not going to remain a big threat for longer than one turn, and your opponent's going to have to pay a pretty penny to get him back up and running with a total fielding cost of 6. A single distraction is enough to blunt his horns and send him wandering around the battlefield aimlessly. If your opponent's running global protection, you can simply flood the field with non-sidekick bodies to block with. DC does incredibly well with both Justice League teams and Bolt Burn teams relying on a fairly heavy field presence to run at full capacity, meaning that you're not going to have to rely on sidekicks to block for you. However, the strongest counter is simply running Constantine Hellblazer. He effectively shuts down any character that relies on when fielded effects, and for his costs, Minotaur is a fairly poor die without his effects proccing. If you'd like to hear more about the other versions of the Minotaur, you can visit my blog, Off the Meta, on the Reserve Pool site itself. It's one of many great blogs all written by the community and hosted by the passionate people running the Reserve Pool. Also, the more interest we writers see in the blog sections, the more we'll want to write to fill that demand, so take a second look around and see if anything catches your eye. Thank you all so much for listening, and have a great day. We'll be right back.
And now a word from your 2015 Latverian Dice Masters National Champion, Count Von Homash. Dr. Count Von Homash.
If you want to become champion, you must prepare. Roll lots of dice. Read articles. Ask questions. When you're ready, you can be champion. That is, of course, unless I'm in the tournament.
That was your 2015 Latverian Dice Masters National Champion, Count Von Homash.
Martha, bring me my inhaler.
Yeah, we need help for the 2015 Latverian Dice Masters National Champion, Dr. Count Von Homash. We'll move now to the West Coast Avengers. This is Shadowmeld's team. Any excuse to put a Wonder Man on the team, he will take it. And the West Coast Avengers as well. I'm currently reading through the original storyline, and I'm absolutely in love with these characters. And this team, I think, is going to be a lot of fun to play. We'll start off with a non-Avenger, but it is probably the most important character on this team, and there's a reason why it's on my team as well. The two-cost shield, Maria Hill, Avengers Liaison. Three dice on the card. When this character and a shield energy character go to the used pile at the same time, put both into your prep area instead. But wait a minute, Maria Hill wasn't on the West Coast Avengers.
You're absolutely right. But you knew who was on the West Coast Avengers? Bobby Morris, a.k.a. Mockingbird. And if you've watched Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., she is effectively the powerful woman in charge type of character. And I didn't really want to bring in Black Canary, who is basically the DC version of Mockingbird. So I decided to go with Maria Hill. She just fit the team a little better. But for all intents and purposes, she's basically the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent version of Bobby Morris that you can see on Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right, now we've already talked about why Maria Hill is such an important character in the first segment of this program, so we'll move on to the next character. This one also needs a little bit of explanation. It is the highest cost character on this team by far, 7-cost Bolt. Phoenix Red from AVX, you have 2 dice on her card. When Phoenix is engaged, you may spend 2 bolts to deal 4 damage to a character or the opponent, and the global pay bolt target character must attack. So 2 questions. 1, who is she representing from the West Coast Avengers? And 2, how likely are you that you're going to buy her?
Okay, we'll start with number 2 first. Very unlikely that you'll actually buy her, but her global is really good. In fact, you could even bring the common version of her if you were trying to make this a Little Cup team. So that wouldn't be much of a trade-off there. And number 1, she represents a character called Firebird. You know, Phoenix, Firebird. Who had powers of precognition, flames, fire blasts, the ability to fly, and pretty much everything else that the Phoenix had that wasn't like, oh, hey, by the way, I'm the biggest, godliest force in all of Marvel Universe stuck into one little hot redhead. The reason I think that Firebird got such a low fan base compared to, say, Phoenix is, 1, because she was on West Coast Avengers and not front page in the X-Men, but also because she was one of the, you know, 1980s diversity characters that Marvel started putting in. So her fan base was intentionally designed to be a smaller clique of people. And if I recall correctly, she was a Hispanic character that was added to the team for her diversity factor. So that's probably why her fan base is a little less and probably why you haven't heard of her. But she is a proud, strong member of the West Coast Avengers.
This is one of those globals that you look at and think, well, it's not going to hurt me a lot if my opponent tries to use it because I'm going to be attacking first. I'm going to be more aggressive right away, so I don't really care if they're going to force my characters to attack. So I really like the inclusion of Phoenix Red on this team for sure. We'll go to the actual meat of this team, and I really, really like this card. I'm going to start right at the top. 2 dice of Iron Man Tin Head from the Age of Ultron set on this card. He is a 4-cost Avenger. He is a Bolt. Iron Man gets +1 attack for each opposing active villain. And he has a global as well. Pay Bolt to make 1 character a villain until the end of turn.
I played with a bunch of different Iron Man to use. I decided that no matter what, it needs to be an AOU Iron Man. You could use Ten Head. You could use any of the other starter Iron Men. Even the three cost with no text. Because the real reason Iron Man is on this team is to help promote one of our other characters. And it actually goes about the same way in the Avengers West Coast storyline. Because when Iron Man originally joined the West Coast team, it wasn't actually Iron Man. It was instead War Machine.
Yes, and War Machine is the next character on this team. Two dice on the card. Parnell Jacobs, which was not the same War Machine that was in the first West Coast Avengers team, but that doesn't matter. The point is it's War Machine. Five cost shield. The shield is very important. We'll talk about that later on. War Machine can't be blocked if you have Iron Man fielded. And a global, when one of your shield characters damages your opponent in the attack step, pay shield to gain one life. I'm guessing you're not going to use that too often, but I'm guessing the blocked, while the fact he cannot be blocked while Iron Man is fielded is the reason he's on this team.
Yeah, I mean, you can gain the life if you have nothing else to do with your shields. But I tend to like saving my shields to interrupt my opponent's attack step after I attack. You know, because the most exposed time in Dice Masters is right after you attack, because you lose a lot of your field, and your opponent probably gains a lot of things, either through prepping or just because you lost stuff and he's getting his whole turn. So I like to save my shield, but if I am pretty confident that my opponent isn't going to do anything, I can gain that one life with this global. And that'll allow me to mitigate some other factors. On the other hand, there's a character on this team who actually gets better when my life gets lower. So sometimes I don't even care.
And you're talking about an original West Coast Avenger as well. Three costs on the dice from the Age of Ultron set. Any person who knows Shadowmeld knew he was going to be on this team. The three-cost shield, Wonder Man, Simon Williams, a villain. When you have less than 11 life, Wonder Man loses the villain affiliation, gains Avenger, but also gains plus one attack and plus one defense.
So if I'm at 10 health, I spend three to buy a 3-4 character or a 5-5 character or a 5-6 character for three shields. That's like buying an ant man, I mean a giant man almost. That's just really good. And more importantly, he's a three cost shield character, so he combos with Maria Hill. If I have two shields and three other energy, I can buy Wonder Man and Maria Hill, immediately prep them both, and they're ready and raring to go for next turn. So it's kind of really good.
The other advantage, of course, that Wonder Man has on Giant Man is that both Wonder Man and Maria Hill go through unblocked, or Wonder Man and War Machine go through unblocked. The way that we believe the rule is right now is that they would go to the prep area as opposed to going to the used pile. So any time you can get War Machine getting through unblocked and going to the prep area, oh, you got to take that advantage all the time. And
oh yeah, I was going to say absolutely. War Machine really is the win condition for this team, and getting him on the field unblocked and hitting your opponent three or four times with him is really all it takes. And if you can whittle their field down enough that you can squeak them like a one attack Maria Hill through, that your opponent's like, I have to choose Maria Hill or a Wonder Man hitting me for five. I will let the Maria Hill through and the War Machine through automatically. So now you get to field both of them or prep both of them. Meanwhile, the Wonder Man gets chump locked or what have you, and then you're good to go again the next turn.
Remember this exact situation. We're going to talk about it later on, and Shadowmeld is going to explain why he has no issue with Maria Hill going through unblocked. But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the leader of the West Coast Avengers, Hawkeye. What kind of arrow? Three dice on the card from the Age of Ultron set. Three cost mask, Avengers affiliation. When fielded, your opponent chooses one of their characters. Hawkeye deals three damage to that character, and if they are not KO'd, you take two damage.
So I mentioned how we don't mind our life getting a little low. This Hawkeye is pretty terrible according to many accounts, but I didn't want to bring the Hawkeye that actually raises my opponent's health. I did want to have a mask character in case I went up against Professor Xavier. And I needed a Hawkeye of some sort. I didn't really want any of the Bolt Hawkeyes. So instead, I decided to go with this one because I'm not fielding as many Avengers as I would because the West Coast Avengers wasn't a true Avengers team. And as you can already see, a lot of the characters on this team don't even have the Avengers affiliation. So all the team watch abilities of the other Hawkeyes just weren't doing it. And so I decided to go with this guy. He's a very situational buy. Like if you have a bad first turn or if you know Professor X is out there and you want to get some masks in circulation. What I do like about his ability is that it doesn't hurt me as much because it ends up pumping up my Wonder Man eventually. And the ability still does 3 damage to a character. So if I can eliminate all the characters except the one that I want to take 3 damage, great. Perfect. If not, I'm still doing 3 damage to something, and then I start swinging with Maria Hill, and if you block the Maria Hill, she does, what, 4 or 5 to a character after Hawkeye hits them for 3, so that's, 4 or 5 damage. Most characters are pretty hurt after that.
Indeed they are. We'll move on to Vision, Ultron's Spy. This is the 4-cost Bolt. He has 2 dice on this card. When fielded, deal 2 damage to a non-villain character die. If that would KO the character, put it in its used pile.
Partially, Vision's just on the team for flavor. But if your opponent is playing some of the low-cost characters that are exactly like 2 health, like Serena, distracting them so that you're taking 2 damage every turn, you can get Vision, drop him on the field, eliminate the Serena, and she goes immediately to the use pile, not to the prep, so that your opponent has to cycle back through again just to get her back out. So he's a pretty good counter to some low-cost annoying characters like Serena and even Constantine. Because they're unlikely to Constantine Vision if you're fielding other more important characters that turn. So just he's good because he throws things in the use pile when he KOs them. And you can prep a character for Vision's fielding by magic missiling them to that 2 damage window. So you could even get rid of, say, a 5-cost character by doing 3 damage with a magic missile first, and then 2 damage with Vision.
We'll move on to the final character. In a dice game, anytime you can affect your opponent's luck, I think you win. This is a 3-cost Bolt Avenger. 3 cards, or 3 dice on the card. Scarlet Witch Unity Squad. On the turn after Scarlet Witch is fielded, you may make your opponent reroll 1 die from his initial roll before he rerolls dice.
So Scarlet Witch is really good if my opponent brings Polymorph, because every time she spins up, she gains 2 attack. And of course, her ability is really good too. But I tend to not buy her if I'm trying to go the Maria Hill, Iron Man, War Machine, rush, hit you in the face for tons, buy Wonder Man if I take a big hit, damage strategy. But sometimes I need to sit back, wall up, and hope my opponent doesn't roll the right thing. And so I pick up a Scarlet Witch, and she can help me ensure that my opponent doesn't roll the Beholder face, or doesn't roll the Spider-Man face, or what have you. So she can give me that sort of niche control mechanism.
And some of those other characters as well that really need to do well, like let's say a Gobby. You can make them reroll the Gobby. If you wanted to be really mean, if they're looking to somehow field sidekicks, well, make them reroll a sidekick, make it really unlikely. Basically, you're giving them 3 opportunities now to miss as opposed to only having 2 opportunities to miss. I love the fact that Scarlet Witch is on this team. So that's the West Coast Avengers. Now, we have to talk about the basic actions. Before we get to the best basic action, after all, it is a world champion basic action. We're going to talk about Magic Missile. from Dungeons & Dragons. It's the deal 2 damage to target character or player. If it's on the second burst phase, deal extra damage to a character equal to the level of your highest level adventure in the field. Meh. Global, pay bolt, deal a damage to a character.
Hey, that double burst ability is really good in most metas where you're bringing human paladin. Just not on this team. Magic Missile is, we have some solid bolt characters. We've got, what, 4 of them, 3 of which are in the 3 to 4 cost range. So if we pick up bolt characters along the way and we roll not character faces, we can still use them as forms of removal. The other thing is they help allow us to eliminate the sidekicks that would normally just chump block our Maria Hills. And what we really want is we want our Maria Hills to get in and go unblocked so that they're going to reset our War Machine and our War Machine's going to come back. But on top of that, we can also use my favorite basic action to make those Maria Hills still a threat, and that is Mystic Box.
Yeah, anytime you're keeping a shield in your reserve pool, I always get a little nervous and I always sweat a little bit more. We talked about Dice Master's drills earlier on, making you sweat and making you exercise a little bit more. Just having Mystic Box on the opposing side will do the same thing. You can choose an opposing monster. Your opponent draws a die. If it is a monster, replace the chosen monster with that die at its lowest level. Otherwise, return to the die of the bag. Blah, blah, blah. We're not buying it. Global, pay shield, swap the attack value of one of your monsters with that of one opposing monster. Oh my goodness.
That is what I said. And I'm not sure if everybody's aware, but I got to do an interview with Mike Elliott when I was at Dice Tower Con. And I told him how much I loved this global and how I was kind of known for it. And he was like, you know, I think there's another global coming up that you guys are going to really love. And I'm like, no, man, you can't do that to me. He didn't tell me anything. I feel so sad. But here's what we're looking for. We're looking for something that makes Mystic Box not the most powerful global in the game. Mike Elliott, I'm counting on you. Bring it. Otherwise, Mystic Box, where I swap your Hulk for my Maria Hill and hit you in the face for 8, and then 4 from War Machine. That's 12 damage. P.S. They just went to the prep area. Thanks.
So now I understand why you haven't been sleeping all that well, is because of the conversation you had with Mike Elliott.
No, I haven't been sleeping very well because you peer pressured me into staying up for hours and hours and hours playing Little Cup.
Mike Elliott, me, either way, you know what, you're blaming other people. Take some responsibility. That's pretty much all the time we have for the show this week. Bye for now.
Later.